He looks just like Little Richard. Don't be fooled by his looks. He's got a mean left hook. So if you don't want to end up sad, don't mess with Johnny B. Badd. Well, he's so hurt. That man from New York City. You see him in the spotlight.
Hello, my name is Bob Bamber and welcome to the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. We're going back in the time machine to November of 1994 for volume 3 of this month's podcast. Now, this is volume 3, so in theory, if you've gone through it 1 and 2, you'd have heard the bits before. But if you've stumbled across this part of the show or you're listening out of order, volume 1 is the WWF part of the show. Lots to talk about there. The departure of Randy Savage, a double WWF title change as well from Bret Hart to Bob Backlund and to Diesel. So all that's going in volume 1. Volume 2, which this bit was going to be a part of until volume 2 went so long, is the ECW part of the show where we'll be reviewing our ECW stuff for the month, and a special part of the show that I'm not even on, which is a review of the AAA IWC When Worlds Collide pay-per-view produced in association with WCW. So that's volume 2. This is volume 3, where we'll be discussing WCW, specifically Clash of Champions, as well as the imminent arrival of Randy Savage. I'd like to welcome firstly Chris White.
Right, how you doing?
And Kieran Mitchell.
How you doing, Bob? Chris?
Very well, thank you, gents. Chris, kick us off with the news.
Well, first up, Randy Savage is set to join WCW after a shock move saw him quit WWF this month. Savage was very much still in the WWF company plans, having been involved shooting promos for being a special guest referee for a Bob Backlund-Bret Hart match at Madison Square Garden, and was even on the cover of the WWF magazine this month. Negotiations have been ongoing for a while between Savage and Eric Bischoff. It's said that Savage asks $600,000 a year contract, but will likely receive a deal more in line with Ric Flair's deal as head booker of about $400,000 a year. Savage is expected to make a live TV appearance to tease an appearance at Starrcade, but at the time of recording, he is not expected to wrestle for the company until the turn of 1995. Many ideas are on the table for Savage creatively. It's thought he will initially debut as a babyface, but options including feuding with Hogan or a team with Hulk Hogan and a return of Ric Flair are also possibilities.
WCW also have a new contract on the table for Hulk Hogan. While he hasn't signed yet, it's seen a formality that he will, with the company continuing to build around him and those close to him as we head into 1995. Also hopes that the Hogan vs Flair match at Halloween Havoc would prove to be a massive ratings draw were unfounded. The show is speculated to have drawn a 0.97 buy rate, or about 220,000 people. That all being said, Hogan's share of the pay-per-view revenue of $2.45 million is expected to be about $600,000. Eyes will now turn ahead to the Starrcade, headlined by Hogan and the Butcher. Thus far, Hogan has proven that he can draw alongside Flair. The Halloween Havoc numbers were still way up on WCW's pre-Hogan days, even if they were a disappointment.
WCW hosted Clash of the Champions 29 from Jacksonville, Florida this month in a largely uneventful show that was perhaps saved by a very good match between Vader and Dustin Rhodes. Hogan, Sting and Dave Sullivan defeated the Three Faces of Fear in the main event, which ended when special guest referee Mr. T appeared to strike Kevin Sullivan with Jimmy Hart's megaphone before doing a quick count. Harlem Heat defeated the Nasty Boys and aligned with their new manager, Sensuous Sherry, which would have been a big surprise, except for the fact the name graphic before the match spoiled this and by listing Sherry as Heat's manager. It's said that Harlem Heat are in line for a big push going into 1995, with the potential anticipated arrival of the Steiner Brothers and or the Road Warriors. Stars and Stripes also recaptured the WCW World Tag titles from Pretty Wonderful. This marks the third consecutive month where the teams have exchanged the belts.
Stunning Steve Austin's match with Jim Duggan was curtailed by interference from Vader due to Austin reportedly blowing out his knee at a live event earlier in the month. We say reportedly as there are numerous doubts over the validity of the injury, primarily down to the agreement with ECW to send Austin to team with Shane Douglas at a live event. The relationship between the two companies is frosty as it is, particularly when WCW planned on sending Meng to replace Austin. In the end, Brian Pillman would sub in for him at the ECW show. Paul Orndorff also worked the Clash with a blown out knee, but it's said he will not need surgery.
Ricky Steamboat has been fired. His contract was due to end at the end of the year, and WCW have decided not to renew it. Steamboat has been on the shelf since Fall Brawl, where he surrendered the title to Stunning Steve Austin.
Rick Rude and Kurt Hennig appeared at the latest set of TV tapings on November the 28th, although it's thought that they were unannounced guests as certain members of the crew reacted like they didn't know they were coming. Both wore suits and sat at ringside, although it's unclear whether they will appear on television or not. It's said that Rude is trying to sue the company for making him wrestle while knowing he was injured, while Hennig was the man who was going to be the masked man, but those plans fell through.
Numerous rumours have surfaced this month surrounding a number of names that could be coming in and leaving WCW. Firstly, it's said that Hulk Hogan wants to bring in Yokozuna so he can get back his win over Yoko from King of the Ring last year. Mean Gene Okerlund on the WCW hotline this month has speculated that both Bret Hart and the Ultimate Warrior are negotiating with the company. The Hart rumour seems completely fabricated, but there are rumours and stories that Warrior could be negotiating with one or both companies after Gene mentioned the Ultimate Warrior by name during an episode of WCW Saturday Night. Lastly, Jean-Paul Levesque, formerly Terror Rising, has reportedly caught the eye of WWF management. Wade Keller speculated that it might not be the trickiest acquisition because Levesque doesn't have any history in the WWF from the late 80s, which seems to be a priority right now. That being said, it's thought that Levesque is highly thought of in WCW too, and is said to have a great attitude.
And finally, WCW are billing Starrcade in December as a triple threat of main events. Hulk Hogan faces the Butcher for the world title. Jim Duggan defends the US title against Vader, and Sting faces Avalanche. Mr. T will be making his third successive WCW show appearance in a row, this time facing off against Kevin Sullivan.
Well, Jacksonville, without a doubt, will be the greatest night of my entire life. To have a chance is an honor to step in the ring with Vader, to be the number one contender for the world heavyweight title. Everywhere I've been going, Gene, people have been coming to me in restaurants, in the grocery stores, at the movie theaters. They're all saying how big that Vader is, the most powerful, the most dangerous man in all of professional wrestling, or WCW. And you know something, they're right. But Vader, for 2 weeks now, you have come out here and you have talked about Hulk Hogan. You've overlooked the natural Dustin Rhodes. You haven't stayed focused like the natural Dustin Rhodes. Don't think that at the Clash of Champions, you're going to walk right in that ring and lay me out just like that. Because I'm going to knock your dead gum head off if you think that. You got to stay focused. So here it is. Clash of Champions, you and me. I promise you one thing is for certain. I will be the number one contender for the world heavyweight title.
And we will start this month with the TV review. Starting on the 5th of November with WCW Saturday Night. Kevin Sullivan, late in the show, said that the three faces of fear all have one common bond, that is to destroy Hulkamania. In the main event, Stars and Stripes faced Pretty Wonderful, the match ending with the referee being knocked down and a double pin being in play. Orndorff pinning Bagwell and Patriot pinning Roma. The referee declared that the match had time to draw, as each pin contained one legal and one illegal man. On the 6th of November edition of Main Event, Bobby Heenan linked Dustin Rhodes' Vader match back 15 years when Vader's manager Harley Race lost the NWA world title to Dusty Rhodes. He said that Rhodes took something important from Race 15 years ago, and now Vader was going to take Dustin away. Heenan did, however, neglect to mention the fact that Race regained the title from Dusty Rhodes about 5 days later. On to the November the 12th edition of WCW Saturday Night. The Patriot says that Pretty Wonderful will agree to a tag title shot at The Clash only if the Patriot puts his mask on the line. He said that he wasn't worried because the fans would be chanting USA at The Clash and he would have no problems. The Honky Tonk Man blamed not being told about the time limit ruling for not winning the TV title at Halloween Havoc last month. He also made a complaint about WCW's travel arrangements. In the main event, Kevin Sullivan and Avalanche with The Butcher face Sting and Dave Sullivan. Dave dressed like Hogan and wearing Sting-style face paint. The Butcher got involved and put Dave out with a sleeper hold on the outside with the referee's back turn. Sting fought off 2-on-1 until the Butcher got involved for a DQ. With that, Hogan ran out and run off the Three Faces of Fear. On the 13th edition of Main Event, Bobby Heenan asks about the condition of Hogan and Sting, both carrying injuries, and the mental state of Dave Sullivan going up against Avalanche, Sullivan and Butcher, who are all 100%. For those who remember the Bruise Brothers, who were featured in ECW earlier this year, they faced a team of Hogan and Sting on the episode of Main Event. They lost in under 30 seconds. During the show, Bobby Heenan allegedly took a call from Michael Jackson. Heenan said Jackson asked to be the opening act for the Honky Tonk Man on his world tour. Heenan put the phone down and said, "I can't make a decision like that."
Let me ask you a question, Mean Gene.
Sure.
When you answer the man, because you're looking at the man, brother, you answer me honestly. Who is the number one contender in the WCW?
You prove that. You are. I'll give you that.
That's right. So why is it Hulk Hogan stepping into the ring with Vader? Why is he in the sixth man at the Classic Champion?
Well, that's just kind of the way things go.
No. That's the way it is, brother. That's the way it works around here. But let's talk about Dustin Rhodes, 6'5". 275 pounds, former U.S. champion. Oh, yeah, brother, we're going to have a war. We're going to go nose to nose and toes to toes, baby. We're going to get it on. And, baby, bring whatever you got. Bring your papa. Bring that little baby girl, Dustin, because you're going to need it all. And everything I inflict on you, all the pain, all the misery, all the blood, all the sweat, all the tears, Dustin, that you will receive. Hogan. It's on your shoulders.
And we move on to the Clash of the Champions. Chris, kick us off with the results.
Stars and Stripes defeated Pretty Wonderful for the WCW World Tag Team titles. Johnny B. Badd defeated the Honky Tonk Man by disqualification, retaining his WCW World Television Championship. Harlem Heat defeated the Nasty Boys. Vader, with Harley Race, defeated Dustin Rhodes. Jim Duggan defeated Stunning Steve Austin by disqualification, retaining his WCW United States Championship. Hulk Hogan, Sting and Dave Sullivan defeated The Butcher, Avalanche and Kevin Sullivan in a six-man tag with special guest referee Mr. T.
Kieran, what do you think of this show?
Generally, there wasn't much to speak of, to be honest. I was anticipating overall the Harlem Heat and the Nasty Boys match, mainly because I'd not seen much WCW up to that point. But overall, I thought it was okay, but there was no one outstanding match. And I thought some of the finishes to the matches were particularly bad, some of them.
Chris?
I'd agree. I thought the opening bout between Stars and Stripes and Pretty Wonderful was a good match, but it was somewhat let down by a very, very messy finish. And I think that pretty much set the tone for a fairly uneventful night in general.
I disagree with the notion that there wasn't a standout match, Kieran. I think we'll get to Vader and Dustin Rhodes, but I thought that saved this show. I'd agree. It wasn't the slurry of awful finishes we've seen before. It was just one finish after another that was really confusing and really badly directed. Didn't help. But go on, Kieran.
Yeah, it seemed to be like maybe the ref was a step behind, or the wrestlers didn't seem to be where they were supposed to be, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that didn't help.
I don't think some of the referees didn't put the work in. It just seemed that when the finish is either screwy, or want for a better word, it just seems to take away from the match for me. I don't, But overall, the work rate-wise, I thought it was fine.
Yeah, we'll come to each one in turn as we get there. Anyway, we start the show with Colour Robert Parker coming out with Meng. Robert Parker says he has the most important contract in pro wrestling. He says the winners of the World Tag Title match will face the team of Arn Anderson and Bunkhouse Buck on Saturday night at the weekend. That match had already been taped, despite the fact that Stars and Stripes weren't the tag champions at the time. We then go on to the opening match, Stars and Stripes, Marcus Alexander Bagwell and the Patriot versus Pretty Wonderful, Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma for the WCW Tag Team titles, with the stipulation that if Stars and Stripes lose, the Patriot must remove his mask. We start the match with Orndorff getting into an argument with a man in the front row. For what that's worth, that wasn't the blacktop bully who we've seen on TV in the past few months.
Very hot. Scary.
Well, yeah, that's true. Really hot crowd in tonight as well, it kind of faded away during the show, but they certainly started out very hot. Roma came out and showed some good athleticism, vaulting Bagwell into the corner before running to the opposite corner, jumping to the top rope and then hitting a flying crossbody. The match quickly breaks down as all four get into the ring and the faces clean house. The crowd go wild. Orndorff and Patriots square off with neither man managing to get an advantage. Orndorff manages to tag Roma as the heels take control. Roma drops a fist from the top rope and Bagwell breaks it up. Patriot hits a Thez press for a two count as the faces regain the advantage. Orndorff and Bagwell flip over the top rope to the outside and Orndorff lays into Bagwell by the barricade. Roma hits a lovely power slam on Bagwell. Bagwell hits a suplex. Roma lines up for a splash from the top, but the Patriot knocks him off. In the ring, after the suplex, Bagwell and Orndorff both go to pin each other at the same time, but the referee deems that Bagwell got his shoulder up in time, while Orndorff didn't. And the crowd pops big for the title change. Kieran, what do you think of this match?
Like I said, I thought generally it was okay. Like it seemed to be booked like your sort of standard tag match where they didn't seem to let Bagwell get much offence in, but overall I thought they got really good heat at the beginning. The crowd seemed to be really into the feud as a whole, with the, you know, the kind of the patriotic side of things, but also Orndorff and Roma, you know, they got some good heat at the beginning with that confrontation with the guy in the crowd. And Roma did impress me. I've never seen him wrestle. I'm sure I've never seen him wrestle quite that way before. I don't remember him being that high flying when I've seen him before. So I was quite impressed with Roma out of all four of them. It was just that lackluster finish, really.
Well, when I watched it initially, I was very confused actually with the finish. The camera seemed to cut away at a really strange time, but when I saw the replay, I actually had I was slightly surprised how much the crowd was sort of into the finish. As you said, they popped big for the title change and whatnot, and that surprised me not just because the finish was quite messy, but because of the frequent title changes in the few months leading up to this. So I when you see the replay, I actually thought the finish was fairly well timed. I think it was more the camera work in the initial match that put me off. I really enjoyed the match up until that point. It was a good solid tag team match, if a little unspectacular, but I did enjoy it overall.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we'd be talking quite as much about the directorial work with the finish had we not have had a couple of similar incidents later on in the show. Because the camera made a quick cut to kind of the other side of the rings, i.e. kind of the opposite side to the hard camera side. And they were looking up and they showed Patriot getting pushed off the top rope by Roma. And then they cut back to the main angle shot and the ref starts counting. And then all of a sudden there's three and nobody's really sure what's going on.
Yeah.
The crowd popped massive once the referee raised Bagwell's hand, because the crowd at this stage at least were really hot, unbelievably so. And plus you got the whole pro USA thing, so it's really easy to get into. The match was good. Kieran, I completely agree about Roma. He's shown it in spurts in the last few months, but I mean, as I said, there was a bit where he ran across the ring and just jumped straight up to the top rope without skicking a beat.
It actually caught me off guard. And like I said, I was actually really impressed. And then I thought I started appreciating the Pretty Wonderful team, like slightly different way. You got the Orndorff, the more technical, slower guy. The Roma, the high flying guy, and all of a sudden, my expectations of the match changed. It was really, really impressive.
Chris, as you alluded to, Chris, another title change. This is the third in 3 months between these two. Like, they can't keep doing this, can they?
No, it seems pretty ridiculous. And as you said, it had already been recorded, the match between Stars and Stripes and Arn Anderson and who was it again?
It was Bunkhouse Buck.
That has already been recorded afterwards. So I guess that suggests that they may be moving away from the feud between these two teams, especially after the stipulation with the mask. I mean, that seems more a culmination of a storyline rather than anything that can continue it.
Yeah, this definitely, like some of the other matches we'll come to, seem to be sort of in the middle of a, before the blow-off, but this definitely did seem like a blow-off to the feud, possibly.
It's been a decent feud. I mean, there hasn't been much storyline with it on TV, but the matches have actually kind of probably exceeded my expectations. And they mesh well together, but I do agree that it probably is time to move on. I think it looks like they're going to transition into a feud between Harlem Heat and Stars and Stripes. We'll get there, maybe not next month, but I think certainly kind of January time. Anyway, we will move on to the WCW television title match, Honky Tonk Man versus Johnny B. Badd. Badd comes out wearing a cape saying Badd is good on the back. Badd starts working on Honky's left arm, then hits an atomic drop. Badd messes up Honky's hair as he falls to the outside and fires the crowd up. Honky gains the advantage after using the referee as a distraction, then drops a fist from the second rope. Badd reverses the shake, rattle and roll into a back body drop, then hits a 10 punch. The referee then gets bumped in an incredibly contrived fashion. With that, Honky grabs his guitar and leathers Badd with it. The referee is conscious enough to call the DQ. Chris, what an awful match.
Yeah, I agree entirely. It was flat and the finish was terrible and premature, I thought.
I don't know. I'd have ended this match sooner.
Well,
Kieran?
I've got one note, Bob. What's that? It's laziest chin hold, or whatever you want to call it, I have ever seen in my life. Where basically Honky Tonk is basically propping up Bad's face with his hand. I just that just said it for the whole match for me. It was just bad.
Well, I'm glad you were paying that much attention, because the frustrating thing is that Johnny Badd last few months has actually, well, before this feud started, has actually been doing some quite good stuff when he's been working with guys like Regal and people like that. And we get to, and you know, people group Honky Tonk Man in with Jim Duggan because they're both, you know, Hogan guys, and they both come in and they're both part of this WWF 80s movement that is, you know, kind of running wild all over WCW, for want of a better expression. I don't know why, but for me, like, Honky Tonk Man is a far bigger crime than Jim Duggan, because at least Duggan has some positive points. We'll come to it when we get there, although admittedly that match lasts about 25 seconds. But Honky Tonk Man, what does he offer? And the worst thing is, and Kieran, I'll ask you that question a minute, the worst thing is we're going to get this match again next month. We've already had it twice.
Like I said, you'd think if this is the way they're booking it now, and they go to like a guitar shop here. Where have they got to? That's all, like, to me, that's all Honky's got. Is maybe he does the, as a blow off. He wins the feud, say, if Honky is going to go that way. He blows off and you don't see the guitar shop. But now he hasn't even got the guitar shop. So where are they going to go with it? And what is Honky going to do in the future? I can't see how they can get another match out of it.
No, this match is booked for Starrcade. Chris, what do you think?
I disagree. It was a very, very, very silly finish, and it just undermines any. Well, as Kieran said, there's not really much potential for the feud, but what potential there could have been sort of seems to have been blown away with this sloppy match.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, we'll come to this match again next month, thankfully. Well, I don't know. That probably be over then. Anyway, we'll move on. We get a Three Faces of Fear promo. Butcher says they have, quote, instilled fear into Hogan, Sting and Sullivan. That was original. He says they're not going to make it a quick one and they're going to make them suffer. Avalanche says there's a tropical storm warning, which there was actually over Florida. And now there's an avalanche warning as well. The well-known mountainous regions in around Jacksonville. Sullivan says it isn't about winning, losing or wrestling. It's about termination, destruction and extinction. Everything Hogan stands for, they stand against. He calls Hulkamania crap and says the headstone says here lies the immortal Hulk Hogan, who was taken out by the Three Faces of Fear. Then we go on to Harlem Heat, Booker T and Stevie Ray versus the Nasty Boys, Brian Knobbs and Jerry Sags. The graphic at the start of the match said that Harlem Heat were managed by Sensuous Sherry. This is quite important. We start the match with Knobbs and Booker T, which start off with a showing match. Knobbs does a body slam to both members for tagging Sags, who does a double clothesline. The Nasties beat up Stevie Ray in the corner. Booker T then hits a lovely super kick to Knobbs, knocking him to the outside, and Stevie Ray jumps on Knobbs for good measure. Back in the ring, Ray hits a jumping big boot to Knobbs. Booker T goes for his phone and attempts to ring someone up. Then we cut to the stage and Sensuous Sherry appears on the top rope carrying a mobile phone. Sag gets splashed on the top rope by Booker T and Harlem Heat win the match in a confusing finish. Kieran, what do you think?
Yeah, like I said, going into it, Bob, along with the Vader Rhodes match, this was right up there because I said I don't really know too much about Harlem Heat. Nasty Boys always one of my favourites from the time before. I think the Heat look absolutely fantastic. Like, look-wise, they are just... It's like licence to print money with them, aside from, you know, the spoiler. Another one I'd just like... Another one I'd like to add is that there's a bit of gold in there from Bobby Heenan where... I think the Shivani says, oh, they've got the same mother and the same father, and then Heenan comes out with, that's how you make brothers. There was just little pockets of Heenan littered throughout the show, and it makes such a difference. But like I said, again, I really like the work rate, and I think Harlem Heat are absolutely fantastic, and the Nasty Boys just do their, which is no detriment, they do their standard fare of how they wrestle. But again, just that finish again. But like I said, overall, I really liked this match. Really did.
Chris? I'd agree. I'd be slightly harsher on the spoiler at the start of the match. Because I did really enjoy it, but at the same time was slightly confused initially going into it. So it made me more sceptical, made the match harder to sort of get me on side maybe. And when Stevie and Booker, they're both... on the phone, like, you know what's coming, so it's underwhelming, and yeah. it somewhat ruined that aspect for it, but generally, I really enjoyed the match up until that point, so, yeah. It was one of the better matches on the card, I'd say, for me.
Oh, probably the second best match of the show, but that doesn't say a ton. Mm. Yeah, I mean, the directorial thing at the start is just an error. I think if you're watching WCW every week and you're following the plot line, because there was one bit, I think the week before they did this announcement on Saturday night where Heenan's commentating with Shivani and, Heenan says, oh, you know, they're phoning up this guy, whoever it is. And Shivani says, oh, you know, it's a man, do you? And obviously clearly that was meant to be the tease. So if you're really looking for it, this is blowing you away. I mean, otherwise it wasn't massive. It was an error, a fairly big one, and maybe it did spoil the finish, I suppose, and I agree. Well, I suppose once you go to the, I think it was Booker T reached for the phone, once that happens, I guess that gives the game away. The match was good, I wasn't quite as high on it as you guys were, just because this is, like, Nasty Boys are great the less wrestling they do. Like, yeah. As we saw earlier this year, they had two great street fights earlier this year. They had a fantastic match last month, but that was just because I think I enjoyed it. But Harlem Heat, Kieran, I completely agree, they've got a great look.
They're both
both really tall, both really lean, they both look really athletic. In the ring, they both look like they've got it. They've got the thing with the brothers, which helps with the tag team as well. And with Sherry as their manager, they can go as high as they like. And if they're going to try and bring in either the Steiner brothers or indeed the Ultimate Warriors or the Road Warriors, then yeah, there is a lot of scope for that, Kieran.
Yeah, if those signings come off, I mean, that is one stacked division. If you've got a young team like that, and they can work with people like the Nasty Boys and get a good match there. I mean, the sky's the limit with them for me.
And then, Chris, we got the finish. I mean, Sags, I think Nobbs is trying to pin Stevie Ray in the middle of the ring. Booker T jumps off the top rope. And then the problem is that they don't cut from the hard camera to the close camera. So it's not very clear that because Sags is trying to pin Stevie Ray, Booker T lands on Sags and obviously that breaks up the pin and then Stevie Ray rolls over and pins it. Chris, again, one of those things where in isolation we probably wouldn't talk about it, but this is the second of three really bad finishes camera-wise.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a trend that the first match set and this carried it on. I did enjoy the match and very, very impressed with Harlem Heat, but the finish was sloppy, but I guess that's less to do with the four men actually in the match than the people behind the scenes, so it's harsh to be critical, but
we'll see. Anyway, we move on to Vader with Harley Race against Dustin Rhodes. Vader hits Dustin with a stiff right in the corner. Vader shouts, "This ain't no tea party," before spitting in Dustin's face. Dustin charges at him and takes Vader off his feet. The crowd go ballistic. Dustin rips off Vader's mask and slugs him with lefts and rights. Dustin hits Vader with a crossbody block for a near fall, then clotheslines him over the top rope. They spill to the outside. The referee breaks them up, so Dustin just wipes out Harley Race instead. Back in the ring, Dustin Dustin hits a very easy-looking suplex on Vader, who is reeling on the outside. Vader then regains the advantage and returns to the corner with some hard-hitting strikes. Vader hits Dustin with a left hand so hard that Dustin flips over in the air. Vader runs at Dustin, but Dustin catches him. Dustin hits Vader, but then knocks the ref out. Dustin goes for a bulldog, but Vader catches him and throws him clean over the top rope to the outside. That was very good. Yeah. Vader hits a Vader bomb, but Dustin gets his foot under the rope. Vader goes for a second, but Dustin kicks out. Dustin rallies, but Vader drops him. Vader then jumps off the second rope, but Dustin catches him and throws him to the mat with a power slam. Dustin fights back, and the crowd get into it. Dustin lays in some heavy blows, but takes a clothesline from the top rope to get Vader off his feet. Dustin hits a DDT from the second rope, but only for a two count. Dustin hits a bulldog, but Race gets involved. Dustin goes off the distraction. Vader crashes into the pair of them, then picks up Dustin by his legs, lifts him up, then slams him with a face-first powerbomb into the canvas and covers him for the three count. After the match, Dustin gets beat down 2-on-1 until Hacksaw Jim Duggan comes out and runs off Vader with a 2x4. Chris, this was fantastic.
Yeah, easily the match of the night. The crowd were really, really behind Dustin, and he looked fantastic in this. He really did. It might have been nice to see him go over, but Duggan running out and then what happens later in the show kind of explains why, maybe, like, for the benefit of Vader, why Dustin couldn't. But it might have been nice to see him win, but aside from that, it was an excellent match.
Kieran?
Yeah, I mean, I just got like one word. I mean, it was like momentum. I thought the momentum behind Rhodes, both from the crowd and his own offense at the start, was absolutely astounding. The quickness in the guy and the way he was putting the moves together was, again, I go back to that first match before, it actually took me back how quick Rhodes was around the ring. And then, of course, then you get Vader in that's allowed to slow it down a bit. And then, like Chris, I was a bit like surprised at the finish, but then, like Chris said, when it carries on, you see why they booked it that way. You can sort of see, well, if this comes in the middle of the feud and then the blow-off, if it comes to it, is Rhodes winning, then this was absolutely a fantastic way to do it.
Well, we say that, but the match next month at Starrcade is Vader and Jim Duggan. But we'll come to that. This was tremendous. I mean, you speak about Dustin kind of being so kind of a crowd favourite. I think Vader deserves a lot of credit for that. Okay, yeah. You can't spit in someone's face very often. but that bit where Dustin got fired up and like kind of dumped Vader on his back after getting spit in his face, that was phenomenal. The crowd went berserk. That was probably the biggest pop of the entire night. Dustin shows some great intensity. Man, I'm a bigger fan of Vader as there is. And this was one of his better matches of the year. And this was about as good as you want a TV match to be, in all honesty. This is the kind of thing, if it gets any better, I want people paying for it.
Yeah.
But as a TV match goes, this was great. And what happened at the end of the match, I think, is kind of a precursor to what we're about to hear about with the Duggan match next, and they had to set up something. But we will move on with Mean Gene Okerlund being joined by Jimmy Hart, Hogan, Sting and Dave Sullivan backstage. Both Sting and Sullivan are wearing red and yellow war paint. Other than that, though, just a bog standard promo segment. Nothing really to report of any note. A lot of shouting and people being fired up. Then we get to the United States title match, Hacksaw Jim Duggan versus Stunning Steve Austin. Austin walks out not walking too cleverly. In theory, at least, his knee's injured. Hacksaw Jim Duggan starts a USA chant. Very little action before Vader runs out and forces the DQ. Hacksaw grabs his 2x4 and Vader runs off. Chris, this match lasted about 30 seconds. In theory, at least, and I'm inclined to think it's right, Austin was injured, so there's not really much to say about this. Yeah, I guess there is an argument to say don't air the match at all, but given that Austin couldn't work, I think this is about right.
Yeah, I the biggest issue I had with it was that it came immediately after Vader's match with Dustin Rhodes. I know there was the promo in between, but just for me, I would have maybe swapped the Heat match with Vader's, just so he was slightly further, just so it was less obvious that he was going to run back out just after Duggan had cleared him out of the ring and he'd run away. That might have been a better way to do it. That would be the biggest criticism. If Austin technically it reportedly is injured, then I kind of understand it. But that would have been my biggest issue with the whole thing.
Kieran?
Yeah, totally. I mean, with the injury and everything, you can understand why they booked it the way they booked it. You know, some people might have said who are not sort of maybe clued up might have thought it was a bit of a waste of time. But at least it did something, you know, at least with the interference, that you kind of know that it's going somewhere. They didn't just do sort of some, I don't know, some quick schoolboy roll up or something like that. At least there was something for the crowd to watch.
Yeah, and nothing more to add, really. Again, yeah. I mean, in theory, at least, Austin was meant to win the title back last month. I don't know how that affects things going forward, but clearly it hasn't happened yet. And again, if you've got someone who's injured, you've got to get out of it. I actually think they did quite a good job of it. All story told. Austin was limping, but he was moving fairly well. You know, they kind of covered it, and they kind of shot. One of their good bits of camera work was Austin walking to the ring. They kind of focused on his face, so his limp. His limp was less noticeable. I think in part the reason they didn't want to call him injured is because the way they taped TV. I think Austin was wrestling in matches after the clash aired, that was also, he was taped before he got injured. So, you know, you can't play up the injury too much, I suppose. Then we get to the main event. Hulk Hogan, Sting and Dave Sullivan versus the Three Faces of Fear, Kevin Sullivan, Avalanche and The Butcher, with the special guest referee, Mr. T. Hogan is also decked out in red and yellow war paint. Hogan bites Kevin Sullivan's forehead as the match begins. The match quickly breaks down with tags not being abided by and all six men ending up in the ring. Avalanche does a standing headbutt to Dave Sullivan, who immediately leaves the match with an arm or shoulder injury. It's now 2-on-3. Hogan tries to body slam Avalanche, but he doesn't have the strength as Avalanche takes control. Hogan tries again, but this time he just falls under the weight of Avalanche. The heels continue to dominate with Hogan with regular tags. Hogan rallies, but gets tripped by the Butcher as Avalanche takes control again. Sting is getting very agitated on the apron. Hogan manages to get the hot tag and Sting unloads. Sting throws Kevin Sullivan into Avalanche. Avalanche catches Sullivan and runs at Sting in the corner, sandwiching him in there. Sting throws Sullivan off the top and Hogan and Butcher get tagged in. Hogan hulks up and fights off all three. Sullivan grabs Hart's megaphone. Hogan hits the big boot to Butcher. Mr. Tree seems to level Sullivan with the megaphone, but it's not particularly clear given the camera's so far back. And Hogan gets a quick three count as Mr. T counts fast. The crowd pop big. Immediately after the match, Sullivan hits Mr. T with the megaphone and the heels attack. Butcher locks Hogan in a sleeper. The Armstrong brothers run out, but they get laid out. Then come out Stars and Stripes, who also get laid out. So WCW officials and police come out. Hogan is still in the sleeper hold at this stage. Eventually, the three heels walk off and Kevin Sullivan says, quote, "The King is dead." We'll come to the post-match stuff in a bit, Kieran, but starting on his thoughts of the match.
Yeah, it was okay. It was sort of like typical Hogan booking, where he takes all the, you know, takes all the offense and build to that hot tag. I thought it was quite sensible. Obviously, they got Brother Dave out of there quite quick with the arm injury. It was the way Mr. T counted annoyed me. I don't know why that annoyed me. But apart from that,
In theory, he got into an argument with Kevin Sullivan right before it. In theory, I don't know. It wasn't particularly a well-told story. Chris?
I'd agree. Like, I feel like I repeat myself pretty much every time you come to me, but the finish was a letdown. Mr. T did annoy me as well. Overall, I thought it was a decent match, if, like, somewhat predictable and, again, unspectacular. But I quite enjoyed it. I thought Sting looked pretty good throughout. Generally, if I had to pick one of the five men who impressed me the most, it would have probably been him at times. But aside from that, there's not too much to say about the actual match itself.
No, I mean, it was... The finish was strange. I mean, Jimmy Hart's the guy with the megaphone, which explains how that gets into the match. It seems like Kevin Sullivan's on the outside and nicks the megaphone off him. Kevin Sullivan goes in the ring and Mr. T grabs the megaphone off him. And the camera's sat in the hard camera position. And whether it was just a bad arena, just because the hard camera position wasn't very good. But then Mr. T, and there's other things going on in the ring. But Mr. T knocks out Kevin Sullivan. Hogan runs over, pins him. Mr. T does a quick three count. The match ends. Kevin Sullivan pops straight back up and starts attacking Hogan. It was very bizarre. A lot of the things they did in this match, it wasn't a very good match. I mean, it was very difficult to follow at times. There's a lot of times with more than two guys in the ring. The finish was confusing. It's not a feud I'm into. The Three Faces of Fear are just not very good. And I don't particularly understand why they didn't, go on.
Sorry, Bob. Kevin Sullivan is just a really odd look for a wrestler. Very odd, and like his moveset, I couldn't quite work the guy out, to be honest.
No, but that all being said, he is carrying this faction.
I said that promo, though, I mean, he was easily the best out of the three, so I can kind of see why he's in there.
Yeah, I mean, ironically, he's the guy who's probably impressing the most, and yet he's the one guy who's probably in there more because of circumstance rather than because they wanted Kevin Sullivan. It's just more it tied in with the Dave Sullivan feud, which has been going on the last couple of months. But it wasn't very good. And then, Chris, we get this very odd thing with Stars and Stripes running out at the end and getting beaten up. Your new tag team champions.
It was very, very strange. It was an even more questionable decision, considering what happened at the start of the night. I know it already had been recorded, but setting up for, at least sort of in TV, like, scheduling, their match coming at the weekend, and then they get beaten up by someone who's irrelevant to that storyline as well. It didn't make sense to me, and generally summed up an underwhelming night for me.
Kieran?
Yeah, that is... when they came out there, I thought, well, hang on a minute, this is really good, this is really going to get them over. They've just beaten Pretty Wonderful in the first match. They come back in the main event and rescue the whole thing. And I thought, the crowd is... Actually, in my head, I said, and I've got to know here, the crowd is now going to go eight. And I was going to write shit, and I didn't. Because then they got beaten up.
Probably should have done. Probably should have written shit.
I should have just left out the eight then and just put shit. Because I was just like, and then they get smacked around and I'm just like, what the hell?
I don't know. I think you're right, because they could have set up a TV main event of Hogan and Stars and Stripes. All three USA.
An eight-man tag, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? With Hogan, Stars and Stripes, flipping out American flags.
Dug it in for good manager. Yeah, it summed up. Probably not the best of nights. Chris, your brief overall thoughts on the show and a score rating out of 10.
Overall thoughts, a bit sloppy. There was a lack of real impressive in-ring work. For me, out of 10, maybe a 5. And if I'm feeling generous, a 6. Probably nearer the 5. Pretty underwhelmed all in all.
Kieran?
Yeah, same. I mean, generally, like I said, I think I've been more harsh on the ring work than I should have been, and I think that alludes to more to the finishes leaving a bit of a sour taste in my mouth. But overall, like I said, I really enjoyed the Rhodes match, and I love seeing the Harlem Heat, and I was impressed with that first match as well. So you take them three together, and I'd give it a solid, like, 6 out of 10.
I was in more of 4. I wasn't the only match for me here of any note. The only match I'd recommend anyone go back, seek out and find is the Vader Rhodes match, which was very, very good. But other than that, I wasn't overwhelmed really with anything. As you said, Kieran, the work rate was decent, but the booking decisions were strange in parts. The main event was, well, I'm not going to say the main event was a big letdown because my expectations were low, but they kind of met them.
I suppose, again, I'm probably being overly generous because that really did sour it right at the end, that main event. It really did.
But Vader and Rhodes is not really to do kind of match of the month because we're all out of whack here into the parts. But Vader and Rhodes really is a good match and I would highly recommend that. And what really helped as well is the crowd didn't stay hot. That's the really weird thing, was that the crowd was super hot to begin with. But after, and maybe this is a bad sign, but they didn't, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but they weren't exactly blown away for the main event.
No, not at all. And that in itself sort of confirms what all of us are saying about the event as a whole, probably both in the ring and in terms of messy finishes. It does tend to completely underwhelm what happens before it. As Kieran said, it leaves a sour taste in the mouth and I don't think it's a coincidence that all three of us highlight unspectacular matches and messy finishes and the crowd is slowly less and less into the event.
All right, fans, you've just seen a bit of action, the Harlem Heat. What a shocker at the Clash of the Champions when Sensuous Sherry showed up out of left field. As you know, at Starrcade, Harlem Heat is going to be squaring off against the Nasty Boys. Sherry, you have done it again. You shocked my socks off you.
Well, I tell you what, MeG, doesn't it seem like that it takes a woman to stir up the heat, so to speak, in the wrestling business? Nasty Boys coming from Nastyville, so you say. How does it feel to have a little fire put up under your derriere, huh? What does it feel like to have somebody hotter than you could ever imagine being to whip your rump?
All right, Stevie Ray, is this what's been at the other end?
You wanted to know who the secret was? Brother, now you know. Now we're going to the top. Sister Sarah has told us, and brother, we believe it. And you know why? Because we are Harlem Heat featuring Sister Sarah. Just like Rufus featuring Chaka Khan. You can forget about that tune because we the top 40 from now on. And the Fat Boys, you got a taste of it, didn't you? Harlem Heat.
All right. Let's go to you,
Booker. Shut up, King Oakland. Everybody wants to know who the secret on the phone was. Now they know. And we're going straight to the top of WCW. Like my daddy always said, Fat Boys, if you want some, you better be big enough, bad enough to take some, because it's on like neck bone.
Right, we will move on to the WCW TV review post Clash of Champions. They announced most of the Starrcade card on the Saturday night after the Clash. Starrcade is the very end of December, so we've got a good 4 or 5 weeks till that'll happen. That's going to be headlined by Hogan versus The Butcher for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. Hacksaw Jim Duggan versus Vader. Sting versus Avalanche. And Mr. T in reaction this time against Kevin Sullivan. We've also got Jean-Paul Levesque facing Alex Wright, the Wunderkid. We've got Jeremy Bad facing Honky Tonk Man, and I think that's it. There might be another one, but I didn't get to that. Anyway, the WCW Saturday night, we had Lord Steve Real coming out of ringside for a Jean-Paul Levesque match, squash match. Levesque has been repackaged. He was formerly Terror Rising. Final match on WCW Saturday night saw Stars and Stripes appear to defend their tag titles that they didn't own at the time of the taping against Bunkhouse Buck and Arn Anderson. Buck cream Patriot with some brass knuckles, but Bagwell barely broke it up. Patriot then rolled up Buck to retain the titles. On the 20th of November, we got a live WCW main event. The fans could choose who featured in the main event. Interestingly, they had a locker room full of baby faces and a locker room full of heels. And it's an interesting, this less of obviously who's in which room because you can pick that easily, but kind of interesting to see who they had to vote for. The heel side was Avalanche, Kevin Sullivan, The Butcher, Vader, Bunkhouse Buck, Arn Anderson, Meng and Levesque. And the faces were Sting, Bagwell, Patriot, Dustin Rhodes, the Wunderkind Alex Wright, Dave Sullivan and Guardian Angel. The match itself, which they basically just steered people in the direction of voting for, was Sting against Avalanche. Bobby Heenan, reacting to Eric Bischoff's protest during the Sting getting beaten down, he said that if you're that worried, get a towel and throw it in the ring, referring of course to the Survivor Series main event with Brett and Backlund and that. We covered that in part one. Quite a decent TV main event actually, given the two men involved, before the rest of the Three Faces of Fear ran out for the DQ. In the end, the entirety of both the face and heel locker room ran out, emptied, and the show went off the air with the ring divided. 26th November edition of WCW Saturday Night. Mean Gene Oakland said that WCW officials wouldn't let him talk about it on TV, but he had a story about Warrior that he would discuss on the hotline. That's interesting. And Steve Austin faced Jim Duggan in a match taped before his injury for the US title. He was managed by Harley Race. Austin was meant to be paired with Sensuous Sherry, but she's now been paired with Harlem Heat. She'll be known as Sister Sherry going forward. The match ended when Harley Race pulled down the top rope, Duggan tumbled to the outside, and Vader came out and attacked him after the two squared off. Duggan ran off Vader with his 2x4, and Sting came out to even up the numbers, and that will conclude the TV review.
One of the all-time greats, Lord Stephen Regal. Lord Regal, I don't know if I dare touch upon the subject. I notice you're sans hanky, and also without the benefit of one Sir William.
You have to bring that up on nationwide television,
didn't I'm
you?
Entitled to bring anything
you know
up
it's
on
a scandal. You know I'm embarrassed about it. We won't have to go into it any further.
The man was an embarrassment to you.
The Queen's more embarrassed about this than what that old cow's Diana done to my dear friend Charles. It's shocking. Did you see the talent that that man possesses? By the way, I finally found somebody here in this dreadful land that I can associate with, that I can go to restaurants and not be embarrassed.
A Frenchman.
Hacking away at their food like most of the peasants, such as yourself, do. I'm the greatest wrestler in the world, I've told you many times. You won't see me here every week. Now I have contracts all over the world. I am in demand. The Japanese are idolizing me at the moment. Did you know that? I'm some sort of god there or something. I will not let things happen to you in America. I will not let you and your system drag me down. My noble and royal connections will not let me be dragged into this filthy society. I will rise better than ever. I will show you all that his lordship
I'm going to take exception to that
in the world, and Mr. Levesque is a fine associate.
And gents, we're now going to move on to discuss Randy Savage. We covered a lot of it in, well, the WWF side of it in the first volume of this show. But I kind of wanted to leave this part of it for the WCW section of the show, obviously. To briefly run through what happened, as we kind of covered in the news, Savage was, for all intents and purposes, WWF had no idea this was coming. He was on the cover of the November magazine. He even said at one point, you could give me $40 million and I wouldn't leave the WWF. Well, WCW aren't paying him that, but he certainly left. And yeah, so basically Savage is on his way over. He will be debuting, we believe, on TV in the next few weeks. He, in theory at least, will appear at Starrcade, but won't wrestle, with a viewpoint to, for getting in the ring probably in January for the Clash of the Champions. Chris, this isn't, people will have heard in the first part of the show, I don't think this is a massive loss for the WWF in the sense that it's not like Savage is a big deal to them in terms of he's not a guy who's main eventing shows these days. But Chris, as a significant moment, this is huge.
Absolutely. It was very, very out of left field, but it's massive for WCW. Probably, if just in itself, for the shock factor in itself, it's a statement, especially after, as you alluded to, the comments about the $40 million and his career motivated. He wants to, like, you want to be in the big leagues, basically, and that's what he spoke about, seeing WWF as basically taking a shot at WCW weeks before he then signs a deal with them. It's a really, really interesting development overall. Yeah,
Kira.
Yeah, I mean, it must have come as like a huge, huge shock, the WWF side of things. And just like one of the, it's got to be, you know, well, only second to Hogan, obviously, like one of the biggest major coups that we'd seen in wrestling up to that point. I mean, the chance to recreate that kind of mega powers feud or team up, then, you know, split up and trying to recreate it. I mean, that is just a huge, huge thing for the WCW to get him as well. And it must have been a huge blow on the other side.
I mean, you know, I think it is significant in the sense that obviously this is Savage coming in very much as a wrestler. That's one of the big reasons he left WWF. I think perhaps as much, I mean, I don't know what his motivations are, but perhaps as much as the money more than anything else was that clearly he wanted more. He was getting kind of noticeably agitated at times on commentary. Mm. And clearly he wanted more of an in-ring role, and the WWF didn't want to give him that. Quite surprising, given that they've been billing the New Generation stuff, but they haven't really been abiding by it. So you feel like Savage, who's one of the more popular acts at a time where they don't have a ton of popular acts, you feel like they would have given him more of a bigger role, but clearly they haven't. I think for WCW, it's clearly a massive signing. And there are negatives to it, but I mean, Savage is another big name. I still think he's a drawing card for them. And one, you know, in the discussion of who does Hulk Hogan feud into going into 1995, presumably once he dumps the Three Faces of Fear thing, it's not a very long list beyond the feud with Vader that I assume we're going to get. And so Savage comes in, presumably works as a babyface for a few months and then turns heel and then can work with Hogan. Kieran, from that perspective, does that make a lot of sense?
It does, yeah. I mean, I also wanted to note that it seemed to be they were trying to recreate that WWF Hogan Savage thing with the Butcher, where, you know, it's the friend from a long time ago, and then there's the split, and then he links up with some more nefarious types and goes against Hogan. And I wonder how the timing kind of worked as to, do you think they thought that there wasn't much momentum, or there wasn't much scope for the Three Faces of Fear, that Butcher wasn't going to draw enough money, and that sort of maybe forced WCW hand a little bit into thinking, well, what are we, like you said, what are they going to do with Hogan afterwards? And, you know, Savage is about as good as you're going to get.
Chris?
Generally, Savage is, as you said, like the format of him coming in as a babyface, then turning on Hogan, it writes itself, and you can see why WCW would be very, very interested in investing a lot of time and clearly money in building towards this. Like, there's, as you said, there's not a massive alternatives for them. Overall, I'd say for the WWF, it's more of a sentimental loss than in terms of how it's actually going to impact, like, wasn't performing as an active wrestler and things like that. So it's a massive gain for WCW, but I wouldn't say necessarily a massive loss for WWF, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I don't. I think had Savage have stayed, because it's the thing, Savage was on commentary every week, so it's not like he disappeared or anything like that, but yeah, he wasn't even a great announcer. I mean, neither was Vince, so it's not like they're losing out massively there either. So I don't think had Savage had stayed in the company, the WWF's fortunes would have changed much compared to how it will go in the next few months anyway. But I think for WCW...
Go on, Gary. Sorry, Bob. I thought at best, you know, they could have used kind of like Savage as like that special attraction kind of thing. I'm amazed that they didn't even have some sort of foresight to say, well, we can, you know, we've got this guy here, all right, we can't do sort of, you know, maybe every pay-per-view we've got or every TV taping or whatever or every house show, but we can use him as some sort of special chat. I was quite surprised that that never sort of came up anywhere.
No, well, I mean, they are pushing the new generation thing. I think that's part of it. But again, we've got Bob Backlund in the main event of Survivor Series this month. We had Lawler and Piper in the main event of the first pay-per-view. They were billing under that moniker as well. So yeah, I don't know, but it's a massive gain for WCW.
Yeah.
A massive gain. It's another thing they can shout from the hills. I mean, we can argue whether they're, you know, kind of cutting their nose to spite their face in the sense that they're bringing in another old guy. We'll transition to Warrior in a minute. Bringing in another old guy, and you know they're kind of that's another spot that could be taken by an Austin or by a Rhodes or by a Pillman or somebody like that, you know. And this is you know, for as much as I might disagree with it, that, you know, they're picking a direction, they're going with the guys from the 80s WWF that drew a ton of money. And right now, they're the best guys to go with. Whether it's going to cost them long term, whether they're going to find that in 2-3 years time, when Hogan stopped drawing, or when Savage is too beaten up to go on, they've got Warrior who can't really wrestle anyway. You've got all of these kind of guys, and if you don't plan for the long term, they might be in a bit of trouble. But they are going into 1995, and the remit is, we're trying to make a bigger splash as possible. And signing Randy Savage is a bigger splash as possible now they've got Hogan. And then, Chris, we come to rumour. It's the Savage thing is almost done. I don't believe he's quite signed just yet, but he's about to. That's as good as fact. Then we've got the rumour of Ultimate Warrior, which I was going to leave it to a rumour, because people are reporting this for a few weeks. There are rumours going around that he's negotiating with WWF as well as WCW. And then, Chris, Mean Gene Okerlund drops Warrior's name on WCW TV. Now, he didn't say any more than that. It was a hook for the hotline. But as we saw with Hogan, kind of February, March time, you don't mention Warrior's name on TV unless he's coming in.
No. It was a very clear signal about maybe WCW's long-term planning, and it definitely gives a lot more substance to the rumours, the ever-present rumours, but... this is a clear indication that things might be about to transition from rumour into actual substance. And it's exciting. Again, like you say, there's no bigger guys really out there than these guys for a wrestling promotion to be signing in terms of attention, just generally. And it's another one. It's a huge name that... would be very, very, very good for WCW.
Kieran?
Well, I mean, you don't dangle a carrot like that and not expect people to munch on it, do you? I mean,
no.
That is... I mean, even if it's an attempt to either boost WCW to say, look, here's another name that we're meeting with, or it was a move to try and unsettle Warrior and just say, you know, get his head turned, and then he'll see, well, Hogan's getting that, and Savage is possibly getting this, and, oh, well, what could I get? You know, where am I going to be if Hogan and Savage are being sort of, you know, sort of not shunned, but sort of outcast now by the WWF, am I going to go the same way? And like I said, if it's even if it's them two, even if WCW never really had, it was only ever a rumour, there's nothing concrete behind it, it sort of works in both ways. It'll elevate them and people will be like, well, they're after Warrior now, and then also it might have actually unsettled the Warrior or put WWF in a more, you know, difficult position with Warrior's negotiation.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it kind of comes back to what I said about Savage. And you know what? I might not agree with it, but if you're going in this direction and you've got the money, go for it. You know what I mean? And like, almost work it out later, because you could be in a point where if you can draw so many eyes to your show using these guys, even if in a couple of years you're maybe a bit short on star power, at least you've got more attention on your show than you have on exactly. The WWF, which is part of the game here, I think, clearly. And with the idea that, well, we can kind of patch it up later. I mean, Warrior, I don't know. Warrior would be a bigger deal early on, but I don't know whether that would fizzle out very quickly as well, I suppose his kind of WWF run did. But Kieran, because we'll come on to Yokozuna as well before we finish. A WWF in a position where, like, For almost kind of saving face, now they've lost Savage, if there are negotiations between Warrior and both companies, have WWF almost kind of got to try and sign him? Because if they lose him as well, and let's say Yokozuna leaves, it's sending a very clear message, even if they have given up on Yokozuna, unless we not forget Yokozuna was in the main event of Survivor Series this month, even though he lost.
I mean, they've been hit over the head once with Hogan. Then comes the Savage thing, and then all of a sudden comes Warrior, and then possibly even Yokozuna. That must, at least, Vince McMahon, he can't ignore it for one thing. So, if the fact leads that he can't ignore it, that means that you must have had serious, serious talks with, you know, people who he's close to, and just say, look, what are we gonna do? Are we going to sort of say, look, we're not going to go over and above whatever our cap is, and we're going to let Warrior go if he wants to go for that amount of money? Or do we put all our eggs in one basket and say, here, Warrior, you're our guy, and you're going to be, that's it, you're now the guy?
Well, it would be interesting. I mean, they seem to have tried to make Diesel the guy, so I don't know how that would mesh up, but I guess we'll wait on seeing that. Chris, what do you think about Yokozuna potentially going to WCW?
Out of the potential signings we've spoken about, this one excites me the least, just because there's nothing against Yokozuna, but the reasons he's being rumoured there, Hogan would like to get his win back over Yokozuna. I don't know, for me that is slightly underwhelming. Like, everyone knows how this one will go if Yokozuna does go to WCW. And for me, that's just not that exciting. And once it's presumably he would come to WCW, presumably to challenge Hogan, and then he loses, where does he go from there? It probably, in terms of actual long-term planning, this one is the most underwhelming out of all the names we've spoken about so far.
And it'll be interesting to see kind of what the WWF have got planned for Yokozuna, assuming they keep holding him. Because obviously with the other guys, they're all out of contract. I don't know what the specific situation is, but I think both the Torch and the Observer report that Yokozuna might be leaving and that might be coming out when that contract situation comes up. But it'll be interesting to see whether the WWF are that interested in going forward, given that they do seem to be transitioning. Also, Diesel's now the guy, and if they are looking to push kind of Bret Hart, you know, we'll probably have Shawn Michaels get elevated up the card, given that his relationship with Diesel. Maybe they'll just go, we're done with Yokozuna. We can't match the offer, because presumably WCW on the back of Hogan will offer Yokozuna probably more money than he's making with WWF, even if it is just to come in and satisfy Hogan's ego. I'm a big fan of Yokozuna, and honestly, again, I like watching him, even though he's got so many limitations. I think his facial reactions are about as good as anyone in wrestling right now.
Yeah.
And I think he's actually like quite a decent wrestler if he's got the right opponent. I think him and Sting could be a riot. I think those two could have a really good match, because Sting, almost better than anybody, knows that I'm facing a big guy role. He knows how to do that. I think that I'd pay for that match.
Sting sells like no one.
Yeah, and he knows how to wrestle that match probably better than any other match, when he wrestles Vader enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, if the Yokozuna thing may happen, I can understand why the WWF, but again, it might come the fact that had Savage not left, had, if Warrior doesn't sign, maybe they'd go, we'll let Yokozuna go. But it may come down to the fact we've lost Hogan, we've lost Savage, we've lost Warrior. We can't lose Yokozuna as well, because all of a sudden that's not a drip, that's a tidal wave at that point. And you've got to save face, because they still think they're the number one, while WCW think they're now the number one. And so ultimately, there is a kind of face-saving battle here, even if there isn't much kind of going on. You don't want to be seen to be the company that's losing talent. And so that'll be interesting. But anyway, that will end this month's show. We're going to be back in December covering Starcade. But I'd like to thank Chris White.
Thank you very much.
Chris, you're on Twitter where?
ChrisWhite14.
And Kieran Mitchell, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on, Bob.
You're on Twitter?
Yes, I am. I'm at JotunThrash666.
Right, okay. I will tag you in that on Twitter so people don't have to work out what that is. Anyway, this will end the third and final volume for this month. Yeah, we're only planning to do two, and then, yeah. But Blaine Dell and Chris ran long with the AAA bit, so this is now its own show, although this has gone longer than ours, so it's probably a good thing that it did. So as I say, part one, if you haven't listened to it yet, is our WWF stuff. We're talking Survivor Series Diesel, now WWF champion, and the WWF side of that Randy Savage discussion that we just had. Part two is the ECW TV review, lots to discuss there, a great Sandman Dreamer segment. Seek that segment out, and the AAA Lucha Libre pay-per-view in association with WCW. This has been the third part. Again, next month I think we might only have two because I have our end of year stuff as well. But you can find me on Twitter at Bobby Bamber. We're on Twitter at Wrestling20YRS, facebook.com/Wrestling20YRS. We're on iTunes. If you use that, please leave us a rating and a review. Wrestling20YRS.com. I've been piling the blogs on this month. Really interesting blog that I put up just at the time of recording today about Sid Vicious. Looking back about a year ago December 1993, Sid Vicious was going to be the guy. Sid was going to be the world champion going into 1994. And I ask, how would things have been different if Sid Vicious had been given the championship? Would Hogan have signed, and would he have drawn? Well, obviously, that's speculation, nothing more than that. But that will end this month's show, and until next time, goodbye.